welcome to Unprofessional. I am still Dave Wiskus, joined by Jamie Newberry.
Hello.
Hi, Jamie.
Hi. I gave a preemptive hello.
Jumping the gun. Calm down.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited today.
I know.
Do you know why I'm excited?
Why?
Guess who our guest is.
Who's our guest?
David Smith.
Hello.
Hi.
See, I'm all about jumping the gun. Welcome, David.
Thank you for having me.
_ David Smith.
Yeah.
That's right. The Twitter
If there's
handle.
Any confusion. Because, I mean, it's the kind of name that I imagine there's got to be more than one of you.
There are many of me.
having that underscore, one, it makes for a great nickname. People can just refer to you as _, alleviate any confusion right up front. And also, it's as much as any character, it helps to... Well, this is going to sound like a pun, and the moment I thought of it, I felt guilty about it. But it sets a bar.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the funny thing is, this is, I think, a first-time story. My original Twitter name wasn't actually _ David Smith. It was The David Smith. And I did that for about 2 weeks, and I was like, that sounds really pretentious. Because, obviously, I've never once gotten David Smith on anything, because there's... Actually, I did get it on app.net, but that doesn't really matter. But anyway, you never get it because it's a very popular name. But I was like, okay, I got to put something in front of it. And I did that. And that, comes off sounding terrible. So I was like, well, let's, when I realized I could use an _, I went with that. And the rest is history, I guess.
I think it's interesting that you put the _ at the front and not the end.
That's a bit, I think it's just, it sounds better. When I'm trying to say it out loud to somebody, like, oh, who are you on Twitter? It's like, oh, I'm _ David Smith. Like, that sounds better than David Smith _.
Yeah,
well, right. It's like
when you're
verbally quoting something, you would say, and then he said, quote, blah. You wouldn't say, blah, quote.
Yeah, exactly. It just works out better that
you're
way.
You're setting that kind of the expectation early on. It is. It sounds like the smart way to do it.
When you say it out loud, _ David Smith, it sounds like I am trying to underline this name. Not that there's an _ and then the name. It is underlining the name.
Exactly. Yeah, but it has caused all kind of trouble throughout my life having a very popular name. My mom's kind of famous for saying it's not a common name. It's a popular name.
it's an
important differentiation. But yeah, it's caused
the kids are going nuts for it.
Yeah, actually, the last time I was coming back from, I was at NSConf, last month, and coming back in through immigration, it caused the scariest trouble I think it's ever had for me is I'm coming back through immigration and I get a little, you get that little, I don't know, the blue piece of paper that says, I'd like to come back into the United States, please. And I fill that out and hand it to the guy and he's, gives me a stern look and draws a big P on it and he just hands it back to me. Doesn't say anything, which is fine. That's fine. I go get my bag. I go to the other guy guy who makes sure you aren't bringing in cigarettes or vodka or anything. And he sees my piece like, oh, you got to go over there. never a good thing. I mean, never good when the customs and immigration people are like, no, you can't come into the United States. You got to go over there.
Yeah, that's not encouraging.
It's like, go over there. End up just sitting there for about half an hour after various people are kind of talking to me or doing this kind of thing. And then at the end, it's like, okay, you can go. It's like, what was the problem? It's like, oh, you have a very common name.
Is there another David Smith that ended up on the no-fly list or something?
I don't know. But I think that was the most extreme version of having a name where I was like, okay, nothing I can do about my name. But
by the way, that might be a great tactic. If you're a terrorist, then maybe what you do is you change your name to something super common and then get yourself on the no-fly list.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it probably, I mean, yeah, if you think about if you're going to change your name to something very American, you want to pick really, really popular stuff. I chose the word popular there. I hope you'll notice.
I did. My mom will be proud.
So speaking of popular names, Jamie has this problem.
Yes.
With the name Jamie. We had a sponsor recently. I was talking to a sponsor, and they said that they hadn't heard the show since Lex took over. And I said, yeah, and everybody seems to like Jamie, and things are going really well. And the guy says, oh, I haven't heard him.
Yeah. It does seem to be a common thing that happens, like the gender assumption, which I don't know why. I've always known more female Jamies in my lifetime than male Jamies. I've known a couple of male Jamies.
It's been more female Jamies for me.
But yeah, it's interesting. And I don't know. Yeah, I don't really know why.
Well, the other thing, I'll afford it when I say it out loud, because okay, Jamie could be a boy's name, but when it's written in an email, so there's a somebody who will be on the show at some point in the future. I don't want to say who. They didn't know.
Yep.
And they send us an email that said, "Gents."
Hey, gents. Yep.
Hey, gents. And it's fine. It's not offensive, or at least not.
Not at all. Not. I'm never offended.
It just reads as, you know, yeah.
It's way worse when you're mistaken for the wrong gender in person.
Has that happened to you?
It actually has happened to me. It's terrible, but I had a really, really, really short haircut and a cashier at a grocery store. But I was like, yeah, thanks.
I had really long hair when I was between like 15 and 20, like for that 5 years or so.
Long hair and a baby face.
And yeah, I couldn't grow facial hair, had long hair. I looked like a lesbian softball player.
Nice, nice.
Yeah. A league of my own. It was bad. I got called ma'am a lot.
Ma'am. How about you, Dave? No, I was going to say about both.
I can't think of a time that I've ever been mistaken for a woman.
For the wrong gender.
That's a life experience I have yet to experience.
You know what you guys both have going for you with your names? Is that you can buy souvenirs with your name pre-printed on them. Mine is a unique spelling of Jamie, and it with the two E's on the end. I can't find those things.
This is a great check your privilege moment, right?
Yep.
Now.
Yeah.
Because despite that privilege, I own nothing.
Souvenirs
with my name on it. Yeah.
Well, if I found it to be, so I have two children. One has a name that you can find printed on anything, and the other has a name you can find printed on nothing ever. And I didn't think of that. You don't think of those things when you name kids. I don't know if you're a parent, David Smith.
I am,
but,
yes.
Yeah, I don't know if that's certainly not like part of the consideration process, for at least for me, when you name a kid. It's like, can we buy souvenirs with their names on it?
Yeah. No, you go through the thought process of, is the Twitter name available? Can we buy the domain?
Of course.
What will their email address be?
The biggest one I was trying to be thoughtful of was, did I like all the nicknames?
Yeah.
Of the name, I think, was more important to me than a lot of that stuff. Because that's always the tricky thing. Because you never control a nickname. Like, I discovered with Underscore. Like, that's not a name I chose it for myself, but I didn't pick it as a nickname. Now it's kind of stuck. And, like, a nickname just sticks. And if there's a variant of that child's name that you don't really like, and then if that's the one that ends up kind of sticking, that's less than ideal.
This is how I picked the name for my dog. I don't know if that counts, but similar sort of thing. Like, I thought of the name that I liked, and then I thought through, well, do I like the things that people would do to that name?
Right. Yeah.
The permutations of a nickname. And it all worked out, so I ran with it.
Yeah. If anybody out there listening has children they're thinking of naming that haven't happened yet, consider, if you have more than one kid, the souvenir thing. Just saying.
Just for consistency. Either go all crazy alien names that aren't going to be on these things.
All in or all out.
Or like Jane and Ted and shit like that.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't know why those are the first names that popped in my head, but there you go.
Very popular names.
So we skipped over what we normally do. David, we want to give you just a second here to explain to the audience who might not know you already who you are, what you do.
Or as Dave often says, explain yourself.
Explain myself. Well, by day I'm an independent iOS developer. I make apps and services, and that's my living. And then otherwise I have a lovely wife and two kids, and that's...
Fight crime.
And fight crime.
Very nice.
When you begin with, well, by day.
By day.
I'm going to assume that anything, when you get to but by night, anything short of fighting crime is going to be kind of a letdown.
True. That's true. I fight crime. But I can't tell you as who, because that would, well,
right.
that would ruin the mystery.
Well, the logo on his chest is an underscore.
Underscore,
it's a huge
yep.
secret.
Exactly. Underscore man. I don't know what his superpower is, but...
He emphasizes things.
He's part of the Markdown Brigade. Him and the asterisk and the square bracket get together.
I would love to sit at that table.
Seriously.
So name an app. Here's your chance to plug.
Oh gosh.
Plug a thing.
I mean, I'm a bit unfortunately known for being having too many apps. So I have an app called Check the Weather, audiobooks, my recipe book, Feed Wrangler, Pod Wrangler, Pedometer +++. That's like the top five list, and then it goes on from there.
Nice.
I'm really glad that you went with Pedometer Plus Plus. I was at a sporting goods store, and they had, you know, next to the rack of things I was looking at, I don't remember what it was, but next to it, they had this like little mini rack of pedometers, and one of them was Pedo Plus.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the worst possible name for this product. I don't think you could have spent, if you had spent a year, you could not have come up with a worse name.
It doesn't seem like they workshopped that one quite
hard.
Yeah,
I didn't think that one through all the way.
It made me feel bad for them because, wow. There's two scenarios. One is the name is so bad it just never sells. And two, the product is good and it sells a bunch anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they're the pedo people.
Yeah.
Pedo Plus.
Yeah.
It's the plus that really sells.
It's the plus.
Yeah, exactly. Ugh. I like with so yours, the that. Plus plus.
Yeah.
Pedometer plus plus.
The steps increment. That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a programming joke that I don't think many of my customers ever got, but that's fine.
That's okay. They don't all need to be nerds. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about your let's say customers, but like users in general, whether they're giving you money or not? Do you want to make things that are for everybody, or do you want to make things that are for like people like us?
Most of the things I've ever made are for typical people, not for geeks or nerds or whatever you want to call it. Us strange ones. Most of that's for business reasons, but like it's also, I think we're a very finicky people, and so I'd rather be making things for people who are a bit less finicky than like super designed. While I appreciate it when I get the feedback from somebody, it's like, so on this particular screen, this character is one pixel off to the left. Like, I appreciate that feedback, but at the same time, like, really? All the app, all the things that it's doing, that's the thing you thought to point out to me to make sure I was aware that I was one pixel off. And like, I'm glad in many ways that that's not my goal. It's a bit more general than that. People who appreciate things for what they are rather than for tiny details like that.
Be careful, because my job is to be the guy who says,
I know,
tiny details. Well, it's like, you know, I mean, I think in terms of I think tiny details definitely matter, but I hear you on, you know, I think sometimes it's the easiest thing in the world to point out what's wrong, and that's what people tend to default to, or think that that's what designers are, like, point out everything that's wrong and that's their job. And it's interesting to, you know, that perspective, but I can totally appreciate, like, I just want to get the thing out, the thing that functions.
Well, the idea of making tools for people who make tools, I can see the appeal of it. But for me, I've always felt like the nerds already have the best stuff.
Right.
And
or
so
they
much
make
of the
it
challenge.
Themselves.
Yeah, the new frontier in software, the new frontier in software experience is making those tools available to people who normally wouldn't use them. Not necessarily those tools, but making that level, that class of product software, usable to people who aren't software people. Software has been usable by software people since software was invented. You look at especially like the early days of Linux in the 90s. This was software made only for people who were writing software. If you didn't have a computer science degree, you could barely get the thing installed on your computer. And these days we've got this amazing renaissance of designers and developers working together to make things that my mom could use. And that to me is so much more an interesting problem than making another, you know, database connection kit layer.
But it's also just a much more interesting problem, I think, because if you're designing for somebody who doesn't have a lot of context about how things should work, you have to be much more thoughtful about how you build it, because you can't just assume, oh, well, of course, they know exactly what three horizontal lines in the top left corner of your app mean.
Right.
Like they may have no idea what that means. Like, and so you can't take things for granted in a way that you can otherwise, which I think makes the problem a bit more interesting to solve.
Do you think that translates to the way you see other products, like things that you buy, like your car or your dishwasher?
A little bit. I do love noticing those. The more you use the design products and things, the more you think about those types of choices people make, or even copy design, I think, is even more something you start really noticing, where you're like, I don't know if that's the clearest way you could have said that. Those types of details start sticking out to you a bit more when you actually have an opinion on them, because you've had to make similar choices before.
It's so true. I love that you brought up the copy thing. Just I don't know if either of you saw.
This is kind of Jamie's wheelhouse right here.
It is, but I don't know if either of you saw. I tweeted a few hours ago this morning. Like I was making just one of
I just woke up.
My simple cups of Keurig coffee, and I know many will frown upon that, but I was making it, and I was reading the side of the box, and I'm going to read it. It says, shift into a coffee that ignites your senses. No, it gets better. Hold on. The rich body. Smooth balance and high octane attitude of Rev put you in life's driver's seat.
Wow. The best part of this to me is when he said it, I wasn't sure if he said copy problem or coffee problem.
Right. And it got both, either word.
And,
here,
yeah,
right?
So for a minute there, I'm like, did Jamie mishear this too? And she's about to tell a coffee story, but then you tied it all together.
Copy or coffee. And David, I did read your about page, and I learned that you are a coffee fan.
I am. Yes, I enjoy good coffee.
So this all ties together, Dave.
It does.
Beautifully.
It does beautifully. And the question that I have to ask you is, do you feel like you're in the driver's seat?
You know what? I have been
do
in the driver's seat
up?
All day today. I'm so in the driver's seat.
You're in a pretty good mood.
Here's so the distincting something. Operative, though. I am in life's driver's seat. So that, if that isn't marketing copy, I don't know what is.
That's pretty good, but it's... Is that on the outside of the package, or
yes.
is that on the thing that you stick in the coffee maker?
No, it's on the outside of the box that holds all of the little pods.
Okay. Yeah, so that's the, when you're standing in the line, you're looking for the right coffee pods to buy. You
yep.
see that, and you go, oh, well, shit, this is obviously the coffee I want.
Well, it's like I order them all on Amazon just based on the packaging most of the time. So, see, I'm a visual-based decision maker.
I'm a review-based decision maker.
I should do that. But with the coffees, I just try a bunch of different things all the time, and I order them off Amazon. They arrive at my house. So I've made this one a few times. It's good. In the scheme of Keurig coffee, it's good. But I'm standing there kind of waiting for it to do its little machine making of the coffee. And so I'm holding the box, and I started actually reading it. And it made me laugh out loud that they wrote that, that they actually wrote that.
The thing
Why
that
would
I,
they do that?
I'm starting to, what I sort of wonder is like, so that's how they're differentiating that coffee from the coffee next to it, right?
Yep.
So you have the coffee that puts you in the driver's seat and revs you up.
Life's driver's seat.
Life's driver's seat, sorry. And revs you
that
up.
That's such an important distinction.
And like, what does the other coffee do?
It puts you in life's passenger seat. Anxious.
I mean, who's going to drive? Who's going to buy that coffee, right?
Exactly. Now, that's the decision
Chumps.
Making. Yeah. I mean, if it's not going to put me now, that's the bar that's been set. The underscore that's been set is that it has to at least put me in life's driver's seat.
Yeah, because if I'm honest, I don't think, I spend a lot of, put a lot of energy into making coffee. I don't think I've ever would have characterized it as putting me in life's driver's seat.
Yeah, me either. Never
I think I'm
then.
Even missing out, though. I mean, that's on me for getting the wrong coffee.
And now you know.
Now I know.
So this is why you've spent so much time in life's fast. I don't drink coffee at all. What seat am I in? I'm not even in the car, am I?
You're walking, I suppose.
Am I walking to the drive-thru of life?
I guess you are.
Using Pedo Plus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there was silence.
And then there was silence. Well, they say that they didn't workshop the name well enough, right? Like,
yeah.
That's the problem. It just ends the conversation.
It makes people, it's funny, but
uncomfortably,
no
it's an uncomfortable
make.
Kind
yeah.
of funny. It's not.
It
a,
really is. It's the wrong
it, it puts
kind
you
of
off
funny.
Because there's no good response to it. There's no follow-up. It's like you ever play Cards Against Humanity?
Once, yeah.
There's certain cards in Cards Against Humanity that are just like win cards. There's nothing. They will always punctuate whatever the thing is in such a way. Like anything involving midgets, really, is just you throw that down any time and it's an instant win. Not because it's funny, just because it's the end of a joke thread. It doesn't encourage more joke. It just sort of ends the thread. It's a thread-killing joke is what I guess I'm saying.
Thread-killer. Thread-killer 4000.
That could be another coffee, I imagine.
Oh, thread-killer 4000.
Thread-killer 4000. That doesn't just put you in the driver's seat. It's putting you in the driver's seat of a tank. I mean, that's it's not messing around.
Yeah, that's true. But on the path to destruction. Destruction.
Wait for that.
I can't even speak. That's how revved up on life I am.
I'm waiting for the 5,000.
We got to start somewhere.
You don't want to buy mid-year and get the previous model, because in 6 months they're going to come out with a new one.
So true.
It's like if you were going to buy an iPhone today, don't.
I know. I actually, the power button on my iPhone is broken. It's driving me bananas.
It's driving you?
Yes. It's driving
me. It's in the driver's seat.
The button, yes. I get it. I get it. Oh, this driver's seat thing. No, I'm in the life's driver's seat. But yeah, this power button thing is like having that pestering kid or, you know, the backseat driver. Yeah, that's what this is.
Why don't you just go to the store and get them to give you a new one?
They have to leave my house.
Yeah. Oh. That reminds me of you. I don't know if you've ever seen this. Sometimes I feel bad when I see kids who end up, you could clearly tell they've gotten their parents' phones. And so like the screens are just horribly shattered and none of the buttons work. So they have to turn on, I think it's called assistive touch, the little like orb that.
That's what I have. Yeah. So that's what I have on my screen right now, just to turn it off.
Just to turn it off because none of the buttons work. All the screens, it's like, oh man, I guess, you know, oh, poor kid. He has this advanced technology communicator, but still.
Right. I love that we live in that world. He must be poor.
He's the ghetto version.
He's got a broken screen.
That's, I feel like I do. I have like the ghetto version of iPhone right now. And
it's just latchkey kids with their shitty phones.
Yeah. Poor things. They're shitty iPhones.
Do your kids have iPhones, Jamie?
Not iPhones, but they do both have iPads, one of which is completely destroyed as of this last weekend or week, spring break. Yeah.
What happened?
She dropped it for the fourth time.
That'll do it.
Yeah. There was a step on somewhere in there, too.
Gosh.
Yeah.
I've stepped on my phone a few times.
I've never stepped on my phone. I do drop mine a lot. I've never cracked a screen.
I've never cracked a screen. I'm on like my 30-something iPhone.
And I have also never put protective gear on my phone. Like I put the little sticker on the back and that's it because I like to keep it in my pocket.
Yep, my phone is naked.
What's your phone like, David?
I used to do the never have a cover thing, and that I recently, I put a cover on it now, but it's a cover/wallet.
Oh.
So I hate having things in my pockets. I really hate it. And I worked out that I could really much, pretty much just get by with a driver's license and a credit card.
Yes, that's what I keep in my pocket.
99% of my life, that's all I need. And so I got a little thin case for my phone so I can slide just those two things in there. And so then now I don't have a wallet anymore.
That sounds like the perfect solution for me because I'm one of those girls that I can't carry a bag, like a purse or whatever, unless I'm carrying my computer around. But I don't do that just from a day-to-day sort of thing. I carry my phone, a driver's license, and a credit card in my back pocket.
I've never noticed that about you, but now I'm trying to imagine you carrying a purse and it just does not work.
I don't. I either have a bag with my computer in it. And so I do have a very small bag because I have just the little, you know, the 11-inch Air. And I have a little tiny iPad. So everything fits in this really nice small bag if I need it to. But usually like conferences and stuff, when I actually have my computer, I just have the computer bag.
In the times that we've been, you know, wandering the streets of Melbourne or something like that, you're not the sort of person who needs to like have a hair dryer and lip gloss and
the Mary Poppins bag.
Yeah, nope. An umbrella in there probably. I don't know.
Nope. A house plant, some soup. No, I don't carry a bag. I really don't.
I don't think you know what purses are for.
I really like the few times I've tried carrying one in attempt to be, I don't know, more ladylike or whatever. I leave them. I remember leaving my bag on the back of a chair at the Taco Bell and having to drive back 45 minutes to go get it.
Was it literally a Taco Bell? There's a real Taco Bell theme happening.
I know. I've noticed that. Lately. I almost mentioned that. We talked about Taco Bell on our last show, David.
And for the attentive listener, the person who showed up in the previous story about Taco Bell, the person who showed up with a car, was none other than _David Smith.
Exactly.
As though it was planned.
Imperfect flow.
It worked out pretty well. We all got tacos.
That's all you need.
There hits a point in drunkenness in an evening when you just need something. You need food. You just want to eat something and then like go pass out. Because the alternative is you're going to stay out and keep drinking. And that's gonna lead to you feeling terrible the next day.
And nobody wants that.
Nobody wants that. New York is great for this because there's food carts and there's, you know, stuff that stays open really late. But in the suburbs, what are you supposed to do?
You live in Virginia, David, is that right?
I do. Yeah, in Herndon, just outside D.C.
Yeah, that's why you had a car, I remember now.
Yeah, the conference we're referring to, I live about 5 minutes from where the conference was held, so.
That's awesome.
Short commute for you.
Yes.
I sat in the baby seat of your car, didn't I?
You did.
That's right. I forgot about that.
I did too, until just now. I'm like, oh yeah. I was really close to the ceiling. I remember
that. This is now, it makes it even funnier if you flash back to the part where you were saying earlier, hey, do you have kids?
Yep, exactly. I'm like, oh yeah.
Because you already knew.
I did. I just hadn't put all the pieces together yet.
Yeah.
So why Herndon? Why did you choose
what
that?
What brought you there?
Explain yourself.
Explain myself. I've been in the Northern Virginia area since I was 11. So before, I was born and raised in South Africa, but moved to the States when I was 11.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
I know. That's so rad. Like, that's just so, such a casual sentence there.
Well,
like,
you're an African American.
I am. I'm an African American. I was born in South Africa, moved here when I was 11, and my parents just settled in Northern Virginia. And so I've been in this area for essentially forever. Like, my wife was my high school sweetheart. We went to high school together here and so on. And so, like, when we're settling down, we just stayed in Northern Virginia, and Herndon we just ended up in because we had some friends who we wanted to be close to. And so we picked,
that's
so,
awesome.
So we picked here. But yeah, I've been in the same place for a long time.
Do you have any desire to, like, get out and go live somewhere else for a while?
Sometimes.
A year in Europe or something?
We've thought about stuff like that. And I mean, right now, the big thing, both sets of grandparents live in Northern Virginia too, like 15, 20 minutes away from us. And so at this point, while we have young kids, we're never going anywhere, because that's an incredible, wonderful thing to have have four grandparents within 20 minutes. So
that's got to be nice. That's awesome.
It's pretty awesome. But because we have definitely talked about, like, yeah, the going, especially doing the kind of work I do, like, I could very easily be anywhere. Like, there's, in some ways, that's, in some sense, it doesn't even make sense for me to live where I live, because DC is a reasonably high cost of living type of place. And so, given that I could work anywhere, it seems like it would make more sense to live in a place that wasn't so expensive. But
yeah,
I've definitely thought about, like, it's like getting a villa somewhere and just being there for a summer, or avoiding the winter and going to New Zealand for the winter and, their summer or something like that, just for fun. But I think, I don't know. It's like I've grown so used to being here that it's so comfortable.
It's home. And, like, I mean, I have to say, as a fellow parent, that grandparent gig you've got there, that deal, like, that's a sweet deal. I wouldn't pass up on that either.
Yeah, exactly. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
It's the thing I miss most about living in Colorado. My mom still lives there, so who watches my dog?
Sure. Yeah.
Actually, still my mom. I have to fly my dog back to Colorado. No joke. She's in Denver. My dog is in Denver right now because I'm traveling for the next couple of weeks.
Do you fly with your dog to drop the dog off each time? That's awesome.
Yeah. How else would that work?
I didn't know if you could just ship the dog. I actually genuinely don't know that. I don't know. No, I mean,
I
through
either.
An airplane.
Like an unaccompanied minor kind of thing, like with a little tag around the neck. And
I just put him on a plane. I mean, I have no idea.
Just, like, wrap a little baggie around her and I don't know. Yeah, I don't think that would work.
Put her in a box.
She's smart, but I don't think she could get herself through the airport.
Yeah.
She would get really distracted. To her, an airport, I think, is like a dog park for people.
Seems like they could be a really cool service for somebody to provide. Like,
maybe
sort of like people who drive cars across the country for people.
And just drive your pet or fly your pet across the
country. Yeah, I'll transport your pet for you and take care of it.
The thing with Pixel is she's a registered service animal, so she doesn't have to, like, go into a weird crate or ride at the bottom of the plane or something. She just gets to sit on my lap.
Right, which is cool.
And she's so small and well-behaved, and nobody cares. If anything, she's a little bit of a distraction because everybody wants to stop and pet her.
Right, which they're not supposed to do when they're on duty, right?
Yeah, but I don't put the little jacket on her or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, I take that back. I do. When we go to the airport, I do.
Because you seems like otherwise they would just think, excuse me, sir, you can't have your dog with you.
Right. Like, in which case, I just show the card.
Sure.
But yeah, I've learned that the best thing to do when I fly with her is to get an aisle seat. Because if I get the window seat, people are going to, like, lean over the people next to me to pet the dog, or they're talking over the people. And I'd rather just, like, look, if you're all going to stop and want to address my animal.
Address my animal.
Address my animal.
It's a very formal thing.
Yes. Yeah. Everybody's going to stop. They want to pet her. They want to ask what kind of dog it is, if that's as big as she's going to get. I'm going to get her little business cards. to answer these questions. I just hand them out to people.
Do you have pets, David?
No.
Me? Well, I do. I have cats. I was going to say me. I don't have a dog.
I feel like you said that. Well, I do.
I do.
So you could suck.
No.
Non-pet
not
guy.
Not like that. I was just curious. We were talking a lot about.
Yeah. No. It's. I had a dog when I had a dog when I was growing up, and a cat for like middle and high school years at home. But no, it's never. My wife has some allergies to a lot of sort of cats and dogs and things. And so it's like, if we were going to get an, it's like, I could see us getting fish maybe.
Yeah.
That's not really a pet. That's more like, yeah, it's more like a piece of interactive art or something.
Yeah.
Like it's
I was going to say decorative furniture. Yeah, I like yours better.
It's not really like a pet, like something that you would touch maybe.
It's true. See, I have fish in the pond out back, but when people say, do you have pets? I never acknowledge the fish in the pond. I haven't named them.
I don't.
There's like 18 of them.
Fish don't count. Fish don't count, especially if you also eat fish.
Yeah, which I do. Not my fish, but I do eat fish.
Right. Yeah. So these aren't your pets. These are meals that you've not gotten hungry enough to eat yet.
Yep. It's true.
I mean, I guess you could make the same argument about a cat. You've chosen not to eat your cat, but I don't think there's anything. You aren't eating other cats, is my point.
Yeah.
It's very true. No cats or dogs yet in my lifetime. That I know of.
Yet.
That I know of.
Yeah.
That you know. Well, yeah, that's a thing. This is my problem with food, is I want to know where everything's coming from. I want to know what all of the ingredients are.
But
not in a hippie sort of way, but like I want to be able to identify what the ingredients are.
Aren't things like New York food carts pretty rough for that type of scenario?
Yeah,
I'm staying the hell away from a food cart.
You were just saying New York's great for this because we have.
It's
the
great
food
because
cart.
They've got all these things. Well, they do. There's also food trucks, which I trust a little bit more.
Oh,
I'm
then
not sure why.
This, well, food. The self propulsion is important for you.
Yeah,
it's a distinguishing.
It makes
factor.
All the difference. Well, a food cart is usually like
a hot dog
weird,
stand.
Yeah, a hot dog stand, which that's already kind of, and you know, like halal food or like donor or something like that. The stuff that I wouldn't. Like, wouldn't be the thing I'd immediately go to. Whereas a food truck is going to be hipster food. It's going to be boutique waffle platters and shit like that, where I'm like, yeah, I'd eat that.
Gourmet sliders. We have the gourmet slider truck out here.
I mean, the cynical view of what I just said was, I will eat street food as long as it's served by white people. But I think there's a few other variables in there as well. I think a white guy with a hot dog stand is still going to lose to, like, you know, like, a foreign guy with a waffle platter truck.
What you're saying, it's not the race of the person, it's the pretension of the person, right?
Right. I want them to be as pretentious as possible.
You want pretentious waffles or pretentious...
if it were a boutique hot dog, like if it were a food truck serving like...
Handcrafted
truffle mac and cheese with slices of hot dog in it.
Mm-hmm.
I would be all over that shit.
Gourmet food,
right? But that same hot dog
word.
On a bun from a cart on the corner? No, I got no interest in that.
Very interesting.
It's all marketing, right? It's all marketing.
It's all in the presentation.
The words on the side of the cart.
I want to be in the driver's seat of life when I eat my street food.
That's right. Are the words that their word choices going to make you feel like you're in the driver's seat of life?
The
That's
important
really the
part
question.
Is that the vehicle have a driver's seat.
Yes.
Would you guys eat street food?
I have.
I have as well.
It's opportunistic, right? I'm hungry. If that is the choice, if I'd rather eat that than be really hungry, I'll often eat that. I don't seek them out. That's for sure.
There's a hot dog cart in Las Vegas downtown, in the old classic downtown. Like, people line up for this guy's hot dogs. Like he's apparently got. I've never tried it, but I hear they're great, and people wait for this guy to come, and then, you know, it's like a big long line. But he's
there's just one like that in Denver too.
Yeah, and he's not in a truck. You know, it's not like a converted Roach coach. It's a cart.
Well, the guy in Denver, it was called Biker Jim's, was the hot dog stand. And Biker Jim, I guess, ran the place. And people would rave about it. And my whole thing was, I'm never going. There'd be lines down the street. And I never will I want to ever go and eat one of these hot dogs. Then they opened a shop. Uh-huh. And I was there all the time.
See, I have kind of an affinity for divey joints. So I don't know.
I'm easily made sick by food. So if I'm in a situation where it's like, man, I just need to eat something.
Then you go
That's
to Taco
probably
Bell.
A situation. Well, No, that's usually when I'm drunk and it's late, because that's when Taco Bell is awesome. And Taco Bell also doesn't typically make me sick, despite the stereotype there. But if I'm in a situation where street cart food is the most convenient, easy, logical thing, I'm probably in the kind of situation where me getting sick is going to be really inconvenient.
Right.
Yeah.
Like me having tummy troubles is going to be really inconvenient. So that's when it's like, screw it, I'm going to get a power bar.
Sure.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, it's definitely a good travel tip. That I always travel with like a big handful of like protein bars or builder bars, whatever you want to call it, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, I keep Clif bars like, handy, or like the little dried fruit, dried cranberries. Yeah. Usually,
that's a good plan.
Because yeah. Whenever it's because like the worst thing I always say is like when you think you're going to get food at your connection.
Oh, and then there's no time.
And then there is no connection.
How many times have you done that?
Yeah. And so you get on the plane, you're like, okay, I guess I've got these pretzels that they
handed
me. And
I'm going to starve to death for the next 8 hours. I've so done that too many times.
So it's like always got to have a handful of something with me so I can just do that. Or, of course, to avoid paying $10 for a little box of sandwich.
Yeah, which a disgusting sandwich. The airplane food is rarely appetizing.
Yeah.
In my move, not necessarily air travel, but I will do that too. But for just here in the city, if I'm going someplace and it's like around mealtime and I'm not sure when my next meal is going to happen, as I'm getting on the subway, in the subway station, at least the one right by me, there's like a little newsstand guy.
Yeah.
And so I'll just go over and I'll buy a candy bar or something and stick it in my bag or my pocket. And that way I know that no matter what situation comes up where I need to eat something, I got it covered.
Wherever the night leads you, you're good.
I accidentally discovered a neat trick a couple months ago where me and a friend went to see a movie, and then afterwards we were out drinking. And at the movie, we bought snacks. We bought candy. And we had had dinner before that, so we weren't especially hungry. So I discovered at the very end of the night, when it was 3 in the morning and we're all pretty well drunk, I had most of a bag of M&Ms in my pocket, one of those big movie theater bags of M&Ms. And not only was it exactly what I needed at 3 o'clock in the morning when I was drunk, but I became the most popular guy at the bar.
He's got late night snacks.
This guy's got snacks.
Hey, there's a stranger with candy over there. Everybody, exactly. There's a stranger with candy. Don't worry.
Turns out when you're drunk and an adult, strangers with candy is great.
There you go. True. And M&Ms are delicious. M&Ms are absolutely delicious.
Anytime, anywhere, but especially, I mean, peanut M&Ms when you're drunk.
Ooh, I hate.
Yeah,
peanut
I don't.
M&Ms.
I hate peanut M&Ms too. I'm with you, but you know what I love?
What's wrong with you guys?
I love Reese's Pieces though.
Reese's Pieces, good.
Yep.
M&Ms in general, awesome. One probably tied for first for best candy ever.
I am with you.
Those two are tied.
Those two, well, are tied, but peanut M&Ms.
For me, it's M&Ms and jelly bellies. The ones that were jelly bears, like the gummy bears. There we are.
Gummy bears. Oh, okay. Oh, I gummy have a bag bears. Of those in the cabinet.
Yeah. You are foreign.
Jelly bears.
Jelly bears.
Gummy bears. What? Why gummy bears? That seems like such a weird choice for favorite.
They're just delicious. Like they're so good.
I really only like the white ones, even though they all get kind of infused with the same flavor. The clear ones.
Something about the white one. The white one feels more substantial. It feels less translucent. In my mouth. Does that make any sense at all?
No.
No.
Not to me at all. But that's okay. I like that. Wherever that came from. I like the clear ones.
No, like you said, it feels different. It feels...
It tastes
like there's... Yeah. It's got a real flavor, not a passive flavor.
Hmm. Interesting.
I don't know. It's probably all psychological, but it tastes solid and the other ones taste clear.
The psychology of gummy bears.
Well, it's sort of like people are like, they get all off on which Skittle tastes better. I've never been able to taste the difference between Skittles. They all taste the same to me. Every single one, exactly the same. It just tastes like sugar.
Skittles, I can taste. There's M&Ms. I can taste the difference between the different colors of M&Ms.
No way.
No.
Dead serious.
So are you like a super taster? Like
I guess. I haven't done the test. But I did. It was my sophomore year of high school. And there was a science test. We were doing... In a science class, they were doing, they got split up into groups. And the idea was to test to see if we could taste the difference between the different dyes of M&Ms. And the point of doing this test, I really don't know, other than to suggest that there might be a difference, but 2 cents. I don't remember what the exact deal was, but I could. And like repeatedly, Like, this was not like a, I guessed right five times. This was, yeah. It was pretty good, which told me that I had spent too much of my life up until that point eating M&Ms.
Repeat success.
And I had this habit when I was a kid of, because in my mind, the M&M bags, they were so small and I wanted to savor them. So I would suck on the M&Ms. So I got used to the different colors of dye, and combine that with mild OCD where I had to eat them in order of color.
Mm. What color? What was
like
your color?
Rainbow
sequence?
Order?
Yeah, rainbow order.
Aha, gotcha.
And red has a certain flavor. It's a very particularly cough syrupy kind of flavor. And then you move on down the line and they all kind of had their own thing. So yeah, with a pretty high rate of success, I could do it.
Yeah. I think one of the things I like about myself is that I think if there's an opposite of a super taster, I'm more on that. Like,
I wish I had that.
I can't really tell a lot of nuance and detail in food, which in general just makes my life, like, I can drink inexpensive wine and it's like, this is great. It tastes awesome. As soon as someone gives you the fancy stuff, it's like, oh, it tastes great. It's awesome. Like, it's nice to not feel like I have to, spend huge sums of money and do all these things to have a nice experience, because I just can't tell the difference. Like,
that's great. And I'm that way, certainly with wine, where I don't know enough about it or I don't have enough familiarity. But with M&Ms, I had become so familiar with M&Ms. I don't know if I could do it today, because I haven't had M&Ms regularly. But I just, it was so many M&Ms. It was just pure exposure.
So many M&Ms.
I was a fat kid, seriously. Now there's an awkward
Now we're fine. We're sorry, Dave.
I'm sorry.
I wouldn't have guessed that about you, though. I didn't know.
I could have sworn we talked about this before.
You know, it seems like it had come up or I had heard it, but I don't feel like I heard it from you. I don't know. Maybe we did.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Maybe. Yeah, I was in high school. I was hefty.
Day. So what made you change that? I'm actually very curious now.
Well, I was a little shy of 300 pounds when I was in high school.
How tall are you?
6'2".
6'2". So that's a good size fella.
That's a pretty big dude. I'm about 200 now. Really the answer, and this is not a dieting tip that I would give, but it worked for me. I started smoking.
Interesting. Wow.
Yeah. Because I'd always heard that when you quit smoking, you put on weight. And my logic was, well, I bet I lose weight if I start smoking.
It's a new habit, yeah.
Turns out you for a person like me with that kind of addictive personality, turns out if you just start smoking every time you're hungry instead of eating, that works.
Wow.
Hmm. Yeah.
And then you stopped smoking, because I don't think I've ever seen you smoke, possibly.
Yeah, I quit smoking a couple years ago. I mean, I when I was living in Europe, I smoked again. But just while I was there. But I mean, everybody smokes in Europe.
Ah,
yeah, it doesn't even count.
It's terrible.
When in Rome.
Yeah, I went to college in England and it was terrible. You'd go out anywhere for any amount of time in public and you come back and all your clothes smell of cigarettes. It's like really?
living in Las Vegas.
it's mind blowing. These people are supposed to be smarter than us.
Yeah.
And they've got better health care.
Yeah, but I think it's getting better, though. At least last time I was in Britain, it was very there were far fewer places that it seemed like you're allowed to smoke anymore.
Okay. In Amsterdam, you can smoke pretty much, like, shy of the grocery store, you can smoke pretty much wherever you want.
They draw a line there. No smoking in the grocery store.
Right. But no, it's everywhere you go, the patios all have ashtrays sitting out. You can't really smoke indoors a lot of places, but it's sort of built around, well, of course, we're all going to smoke outside. And there were plenty of bars where you could smoke, and that's where we'd always end up, because those are the popular places.
Yeah.
It's funny.
I don't think my kids are going to know what an ashtray is. I was just thinking about that. Like, cars don't have them anymore.
That's true.
Restaurants have them. Like, they don't really, like, I can't think of a time the last time I saw an ashtray. Like, you see those big, weird, like, I don't even know, the goosenecked things outside doors, but you don't see.
We still have a good
like an
deal
ashtray
of them
sitting
here.
Somewhere.
Yeah,
well, yeah,
Las Vegas.
Yeah.
That's
because you can still smoke in casinos.
Yeah, it's so funny that when the casinos have put in like these little designated non-smoking areas, and it's very strange. In the restaurants, you don't smoke, but
a little glass booth where you stand there and not smoke.
Yeah, it's so weird. I mean, it kind of is like that. Like, you know, you go to a casino and they have this little alcove, but it's like you can't really. Maybe it's just not as concentrated in that area. You still.
This
leave.
Is why I like the wind. The wind does such a good job of purifying the air.
Yeah.
And you don't smell the smoke as you're walking around.
Interesting. Yeah, unless somebody's
this
right
episode
next
brought
to
you by the Win.
The Win.
The Win.
Have you been on a plane with an ashtray?
I have been on a plane that has an ashtray, yes, and there are always like gum wrappers and stuff in there.
Is that just like, gross, to me, that's mind blowing. It's mind blowing that there was a time
that you could smoke on the plane.
When it was okay to light up a cigarette on an airplane. And that's, they had funny, a non-smoking section on the planes, yeah, as if that helped.
I know, right? Like you're in this tube container in there. That's like smoking on a submarine. It's the same thing.
And you could smoke in hospitals and you could smoke pretty much fucking anywhere you wanted, yeah, to.
Just, sure,
blows my mind that we ever thought that was okay.
It is funny.
It just shows how far we've come, I guess, as a people, but also kind of how much further we have to go.
Oh, yes. I agree. We got lots of things to do as a society, as a human
race.
We got
some shit to work out. You know, this is going to go maybe dark and way off into the...
Are you ready, David?
That's a good warning. Just,
I've got, here's a thought. I was reading this thing. I don't remember why, but I was reading this thing about time travel and why haven't we met time travelers yet? Why hasn't anybody come back from the future? And one of the theories is that time travel is only possible from the point forward after time travel is invented. So that's as far back as they could go. They couldn't visit us. Another was that the arc of human history is very long and we might not be the most interesting point in it. We might just be like, you know, a nondescript little nowhere in human history that wasn't all that interesting, which I would probably argue against that, but fine. Okay, that's possible. But one of them was that before we invent time travel, we destroy ourselves.
You never know.
And that made me think.
Yeah. I was trying to think about it, but yeah, I'm just like, well, then it doesn't happen, right? I like to think that I travel time every time I go into a different time zone, Dave. You're in the future right now. I'm in the past. Actually, it's true. The present for me, but...
We're all time travelers, right?
Exactly.
I've traveled forward 50 minutes and 15 seconds since we started this, so... I'm a time traveler. Though I always loved my favorite story about time travel is I think it was Stephen Hawking who was curious if there were ever time travelers,
right.
And so he had a party to celebrate them at his, you know, whatever, at his house or something. But he only advertised that the party was going to happen the day after it happened,
right?
Which,
right,
I always thought was just like such a genius way to, yeah, have a party for time travelers.
It's not just the genius of thinking of that, because it seems like something that would be in a sci-fi story, or it could be its own short story or, yeah, something. But the fact that he actually did it.
I know, it's great. Like,
and that it was him doing it. It has to be a guy like Stephen Hawking. It can't just be, you know, I had a party for time travelers.
Sure.
It's got to be a guy so well respected and so notable in the history of science. You know, 300 years from now, people are going to know who Stephen Hawking was.
Yeah.
And nobody showed up, which is sad. Or people showed up, but he was sworn to secrecy.
It's true.
I mean, let's get all conspiracy theory for just a second and say, we don't know that nobody showed up. We can only take his word for it. And his words are not only filtered by human perception, but also a computer. So there are levels of things going on here that might be beyond our control or understanding.
It's true.
I'm just saying.
I think we need to work on another sci-fi movie, Dave.
Oh, there we go. I'm still working on the treatment for the last
time. Oh, yeah, that was good.
That could be the goal of the show from this point forward. Is every show is us workshopping a screenplay for a movie.
Or a television series, as somebody, one of our listeners, recommended recently.
What was the TV show?
No, just saying that we should write a screenplay, or we should create a TV series based on all of our material.
Oh, well... Aren't we doing that, but a podcast instead?
Exactly. Let's make it TV. Let's go crazy.
All right. Well, let's get a hold of the people at Bravo.
That's where you'd want to go? If you could pick any TV station to be on?
You pick Bravo?
You'd want to be on Bravo?
No, I just know that Bravo will put fucking anything on the air.
That's where we fit.
So it's not particularly aspirational, is what you're saying.
I'm just saying it's low-hanging fruit. It's a good first call to make.
I don't know the energy of that one.
It's like I don't know if all I could do with my TV show was be on Bravo. I'm not sure if I'd want to be on TV.
Yep, I think you might have a fine point.
Yeah, should we shoot for HBO or something?
At least
AMC.
Yeah, I was gonna say at least like AMC. There's TLC. Is that another one? I'm not very good with
on AMC's Unprofessional.
Yeah.
Though, of course, I don't even watch. I can't even tell you what stations are and really anymore.
That's how I feel, too, because it's television. All
like, I have no idea what's on anything. Yeah. It's on Netflix. It's on an Apple TV. It's on something else. So,
well, there's branding that comes along, like a non-network TV. Like, I couldn't tell you. I have no idea what channel or what network Scandal or Castle are on. But I know that Mad Men is on AMC.
So yeah, I just don't. I don't notice those things very much. Like I kind of.
Well, because when you watch Mad Men, they've got the little AMC thing in the corner the whole damn time.
Okay.
And the show starts with previously on AMC's Mad Men.
Mm-hmm. So it's just drilled into your subconscious.
Right. It also it's interesting to know because well, really, if it's not HBO or something, it's probably AMC because that's where all the good TV is coming from. But Breaking Bad, Mad Men, Walking Dead, all AMC.
AMC.
But it matters because swearing and nudity, that's the line. If they're swearing and nudity, it's probably HBO.
Or Showtime.
Man, what's on Showtime?
What's the other one? Cinemax?
Hey, there ain't nothing on Cinemax.
I don't watch. Yeah, I haven't had cable in, I don't know, 5 years? I don't even know. Yeah. I do kind of miss the HGTV, though. I used to watch that.
That is something that my wife and I especially will we're on vacation. Sometimes we'll end up just like it's a rainy day and we'll end up putting on HGTV. And because we get it in the hotel room and you can just sit there watching
rehab people buy or their, whatever. Yep.
Or buying houses or
it's true. Or rebuilding things and refurbishing and yeah, I get sucked into those.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't have them at my own home.
I don't have TV. Like I've got an Apple TV and I've got BitTorrent, but I don't have like a cable plugged into my television that brings me shows that are being aired right now.
Yeah, neither do I.
Yeah, me either.
And I guess I'm still in the minority with that, but it feels like I shouldn't be.
Are you though? That would be a good poll to take to see how, I guess, yeah, cable people, a lot of people still have cable and stuff.
Well, yeah, because you see, you know, every couple of months there's articles on the internet about, you know, are we ready to cut the cord? And usually the answer is not yet.
So yeah, because
there's
yeah.
still things that air on TV. I'm like, that's what BitTorrent is for.
I don't know. I love waiting until things are accumulated enough to be on Netflix or Hulu or whatever. You just knock out, you know, the binge watch trend, I guess it is. But I fall right into that category. I don't care if it's brand new so much.
Because it doesn't really matter.
Like, it really doesn't.
It's the artificial scarcity of normal TV is sometimes can be a bit frustrating too, right? Where it's like, yeah, we're going to dole this out one a week and then take a break for 3 weeks for no apparent reason.
Right. And then you're just stuck waiting. Like, I just want it now when it's convenient. So I'll just wait. I'll miss the entire season and wait until the whole season's done. And then I can watch them at my leisure.
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 I make it a point. If it's a show that I've never seen, don't care about, but will eventually want to watch, I don't care. I'll get to it because you could throw spoilers at me all day and I'm not going to remember what any of that means. Nothing's going to stick. But if it's a show that I know the characters, if I've seen a season of the show and then I hear a spoiler for the current season, it's going to ruin it for me. So if it's like once I'm invested in a show, I have to watch it week to week or somebody's going to ruin the show for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're a fan of Game of Thrones,
right, because it's all over Twitter and it's all over.
Yeah. It was impressive last year, the big thing with the Red Wedding, that it wasn't, nobody let that out of the bag. But as soon as it happened, if you didn't watch it then, you're screwed because that's all anybody would talk about.
That's a whole strange other thing too, though, because it's a book that's been written for, it's sort of like when people are talking about like spoilers for The Hobbit or something.
I know, right? It's like wait, who doesn't know the story?
This is pretty well established territory. I think if you haven't exposed yourself to it at this point, it's not really on the person doing the spoiling.
Well, yes and no. I mean, if it's new to you, it's new to you. And most people aren't going to read books. They're going to watch TV shows. But the book that the Game of Thrones book that had the events that took place in this last week's episode, it came out in, what, 2000? The 14-year-old book?
Yeah, like, I don't... At some point, it's kind of a... Like, it's not really a secret.
That's not cultural lexicon. This isn't Ghostbusters. It's not like everybody should know the story. This isn't I Am Your Father. This is... it was a book. It was a nerd fantasy book that people liked, but it's not something that you would expect the average person on the street to know.
It's true.
I feel like it's reasonable to assume that the average Game of Thrones viewer not even average, the vast majority of Game of Thrones viewers have never read the books. I think that's a fair assumption.
The interesting question is, how many of those people do you think know that a book exists?
Ooh, that is a good question.
That is a good question. Because I fall into that category. I never read the books, but I knew the book existed. And I was excited to hear that they'd made a show out of it, just because I knew from my friends who actually are avid readers.
Oh, thank God, I don't have to read this
such things. Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah. So I was aware, but yeah, so I fall in that category of haven't read, but aware.
Hmm.
It's a good question, though.
Are you a reader?
You know, I do read. I do enjoy reading. What I read, though, I've never been that into science fiction books, though, to be perfectly honest. There are good things out there, of course, but yeah, I know this is the wrong audience to probably admit that in front of, but it's true. I am not a big science fiction reader.
Reading's always been tough for me because I'm a very slow reader, and so it's incredibly frustrating to... Like, I enjoy reading,
yeah,
but it takes so long to get through a book that it's
I'm the same
way. It's often like it just ends up being like not worth it. Or it's like it's something that I do once or twice a year, like when I'm on vacation and I have nothing else to do, I can sit down and I can, you know, work my way through a book. But
yeah,
it takes so long otherwise that like, and that was, I mean, I've never read a book like Game of Thrones, where if you look at these books on the shelf and it's like they're, you know, 600 pages, 700 page books, like it would, that's
on the short end.
It's like that would be that, if I'd started in 2000, I would still be reading that book 14 years later. There's no way that I would have gotten through it at this point. So
that's, I've kind of rekindled my love for reading. So I was a really avid reader, like through high school. I was mostly into
rekindled.
Yep.
Really?
This episode brought to you by
the Nook.
Totally unintentional. Oh, Audible sponsored once. But
I do like audiobooks.
But no, I took a kind of a break. So when I used to teach at university classes in like management information systems and interface design and stuff like that. And so everything I read had to do with is this a good book to recommend to my students, to my classes? So it was all, you know, having to do with what I was going to be teaching, whether it was management information systems, which can be some really boring books, to be perfectly honest, or if it was going to be an interface design, just, you know, is this a good experience design, interface design book to recommend or use as class curriculum material, et cetera, et cetera. So it kind of burned me out. I have to be honest, it burned me out. Like I wasn't able to read what I really, really wanted to read, the kind of stuff that I really, really wanted to read. And so I just kind of stopped. Then I had kids and then that whole thing and then finding time to read. And I don't know, now my kids are older. We read together. We read, you know, my oldest is reading all the Harry Potter books now. And so it's cool. I mean, I don't know. And I can enjoy books that I actually want to read again.
I don't frequently pick up a book as my first course of action, but when I watched Game of Thrones, I went through the first three seasons in 3 days because I just, you know, sometimes I'll find something I like and I just like dial in and I get obsessed.
Yeah.
And of course I had to go, I knew that there was more story in the books and I needed more story. So I went and I read not all of the books, but from the point in where the show, where the third season ended, I picked up there in the books.
That's,
which I kind of wish I hadn't done, because now, like, this last episode of the show was not as big a surprise to me. And I feel like I didn't get to enjoy it.
Oh, you got to enjoy it the first time, though, didn't you?
I got to enjoy it in a book, though. Who wants to read a book?